welcome to the Middle Chamber Books Podcast. This is episode 8 for Monday, April 7th, 2008. In this episode of the podcast, a conversation with Katie Delahaye Payne, the Dean of Public Relations Measurement, about her new book and about trends in public relations measurement and evaluation. Hi there, welcome back to the Middle Chamber Books Podcast. I'm Steve Lubetkin, the bookseller at the Middle Chamber Books Bookstore, and your host for these podcasts about books, authors, and other creative artists. You can visit our bookstore at middlechamberbooks.com. We have two pieces of news that we think will be pretty exciting that we'd like to share with you. First of all, we're pleased to announce that the Middle Chamber Books Podcast is moving to a regular weekly schedule. That's right, you're going to be able to hear a new book or musician profiled on the podcast every week, and we're shooting for Monday to be our broadcast date, so be sure to check back with us every Monday for the next episode of the Middle Chamber Books Podcast. Our second piece of news is that our podcasts are now being sponsored by GoToMyPC. Now, leaving your shoes at home is one thing, but forgetting critical files at the office for a business trip is pretty much another thing. Well, GoToMyPC can save the day. It's a program that lets you access your PC and its files from anywhere in the world. You can grab the one file that you forgot, and your trip will just go fine. With GoToMyPC, you can operate your PC just as if you were there. You can use all your programs, you can access your files, any of your network resources, and even your email, like I said, from anywhere in the world. And we have a special offer just for listeners. You get 30 days of access to GoToMyPC for absolutely nothing. It's free. You just visit the following URL. It's GoToMyPC, that's GoToMyPC.com/podcast. That's GoToMyPC.com/podcast. And you get to try GoToMyPC free today. And we appreciate the efforts of GoToMyPC to be a supporter of this podcast and many other podcasts that are part of the Blueberry Network. So please patronize our sponsors. Now let's get to our program. Katie Delahaye Payne has just written her latest book on the measurement of public relations results. The book is called Measuring Public Relationships, The Data-Driven Communicator's Guide to Success. In this book, Katie focuses on giving public relations practitioners practical, step-by-step advice for how to measure their programs and how to manage their relationships. Katie Payne has spent most of her life, as she puts it, translating Venusian into Martian. Her mother edited Harper's Bazaar magazine, and her father edited Fortune. So she says she learned to speak two very different languages almost from birth. After following her family into journalism at the Washington Post, the Boston Herald, and the San Jose Mercury, Katie entered the world of high-tech marketing in Silicon Valley in 1979. After spending 7 years on the corporate side, she launched her own company, the Delahaye Group, to help her fellow communicators demonstrate their success to the Martians that they worked for. Katie's a Dean of Public Relations Measurement. She's a founding member of the Institute for Public Relations' Commission on Research and Evaluation, and that's the PR industry's standard-setting body for measurement. She also co-chaired the U.S. Public Relations Task Force that developed standards for PR evaluation, and she was the U.S. liaison to the European Standards Task Force for setting international standards for media evaluation. She frequently lectures at conferences and universities, including the Conference Board and the Public Relations Society of America, the International Association of Business Communicators, the San Francisco Academy, and many, many others. She's a board member of New Hampshire Public Radio and the New Hampshire Political Library. She joined us by telephone from her offices in New Hampshire. Katie Payne, welcome to the Middle Chamber Books Podcast.
Well, thank you so much. I'm very pleased to be here.
Katie, you've got the new book out, Measuring Public Relationships, The Data-Driven Communicator's Guide to Success. What led you to write this one, and what is the goal for public relations professionals?
Well, I think that what led me to write this was that I, you know, kept answering the same questions over and over again, and I finally decided to put all the answers into one book. But it's really the compilation of 20 years in the business of finally realizing that, you know, I had all these little how-to things, you know, how to measure sponsorships and events, how to measure community relations, how to measure online stuff, how to measure this, how to measure that. I, you know, it was sort of this book, I was looking at all these different chapters going, it's not tying together here. And I suddenly realized that this flash of, you know, what it's all about is, what connects all the dots is relationships. That if public relations is about building relationships, you could then measure relationships in a, you know, you can measure a whole bunch of different relationships. So you measure the relationships with the media, with your online audience, with your customers, with your community, and with your employees, and that's what I've been doing for 20 years. And I went, oh, okay, that's what I've been doing. So that's where the book came from, was finding a common thread through everything that I've done for the last 20 years.
Now, you've done an awful lot, probably more than most, to bring us forward from the counting clips era, when all we did was count up the number of clips, multiply it by some advertising dollar equivalent, and then present to the clients, this is how much the public relations we did for you was worth. How have things changed since those days, and what does this book spell out that's dramatically different?
Well, I think it does a couple of things. What's changed is that because the media is no longer one thing, but many things. So, you know, how do you do column inches in Twitter? How do you do column inches in Facebook? You don't. And you don't even count eyeballs on Facebook. You count, you know, friends and, you know, followers on Twitter and whatever. I mean, the numbers are also different. So really what you have to say is all those old rules no longer apply. What is the common, you know, what ties the present to the past and what ties the present to the past? And, you know, it's, again, it goes back to what public relations is all about, is it's all about the relationships. It's now it's about a corporation and its customers or its employees or whatever it happens to be. But that's really what it's all about. So if you basically take the premise that that's what it's all about, what I've outlined in the book is to say, okay, here's some cookbook approaches. Forget AVEs. There's better solutions. You know, there's ways to look at the value of your the messages communicated via earned media. You know, is that a measure of your relationships? Maybe yes, maybe no, but it's a way of quantifying things in a way that's at least accurate. Are there ways to measure relationships? Yes, absolutely. Jim and Laurie Grunig figured that out 10 years ago, and all I've done is sort of operationalize it into, you know, here are the questions and, you know, here's how to ask them. So that's really what we've done, is to say, you know, the old tools just aren't adequate in the social media age. Here's a way of looking at things that allows you to tie the pieces all together.
So what are some of the steps that people need to take when they are first trying to identify ways to measure relationships with their different constituencies?
Well, I think the first thing that everybody has to do, and this is sort of my theme of a, you know, decade, which is you got to figure out what the objective is, because, you know, it comes back to why are you doing what you're doing. And I'll take the example of the ASPCA, my current favorite case study here, because ultimately their role is to save animals. How do they get there? They do enforcement and, you know, animal rescue and animal adoptions. How do they do that? They get online donations and online members who do all these things. How do they get that? They generate a whole bunch of exposure via earned media and other ways. So ultimately what you want to do if you're a PR person is you want to basically be looking at, okay, I've generated this many outputs, I've generated this many articles, and I've this many opportunities to see. I've generated this many unique visits to the website, and as a result of that, I've generated this many online donations. So the objectives have to be really clearly defined in terms of what goal it is you're going after. And, you know, I will always argue that nobody ever really set out in life just to, you know, accumulate column inches. You know, ultimately the reason for accumulating column inches is presumably to get your messages out there and persuade people to buy something or do something. So the first chapter of every book, I mean, the first page of every book, in, of every chapter in the book looks at, okay, what's a typical output measure? What's a typical outtake measure? What's a typical outcome measure? So it sets the goals. And then, you know, from there, it all gets a lot simpler because then you're like, okay, now how do I define the target audiences? How do I define the specific metrics? What am I benchmarking against? All of those things fall into place once you have the objectives. But you can't even begin to measure anything unless you have very clearly defined your objectives. Because if your objective is to convince people of your righteousness on something, you're going to have to ask them their opinion. You're not going to get, you know, their thoughts about your righteousness, you know, simply from reading an article. You might get it from reading a blog posting, but you're not going to get it just from reading an article. So you really have to put all those things into the context of what it is you're trying to achieve.
One of the challenges that PR practitioners face frequently with clients is convincing them to go to the expense of producing surveys, both a pre-survey and a post-survey, to determine if there's actually been a change. How do you help your clients convince their clients that they need to do that kind of research?
Well, most of the time I sit there and I say, you know, first of all, if you're spending, you know, $100,000 on public relations, isn't it worth it to spend $10,000 to find out whether the other 90% is working? I mean, do you really want to be spending $90,000 and have no idea whether it's working or not working, you know, and add zeros as necessary? That tends to work, to say, you know, you have absolutely no clue as to whether this huge budget that you're spending on this stuff is working or not working until you actually do some research. Now, how do you know it's working? It's defining that outcome that you're trying to get to, and if the outcome is a change of opinion or attitude or awareness, you're going to have to do a survey.
When you're talking about the mainstream media, the traditional print and broadcast folks that we all grew up with, what are some of the criteria that people look at today versus the things that they used to look at?
Oh, I think much more people are looking at messaging, positioning on issues. You know, am I winning or losing key battles in the medium? I think the big thing that we've seen a huge change about is people tracking spokespeople, the degree to which their thought leaders are being influential or being quoted. Looking more at, I would have to say those are probably the two big things that we weren't seeing that much of 10 years ago. We've always seen, you know, tonality and prominence and dominance and things like that, but presence and absence of key messages, how people are being positioned on key issues, and frequency of spokespeople quoted are the three things that we weren't seeing a whole lot of 10 years ago, but now it's pretty much, you know, part of everybody's program.
We've heard the term share of mind used from time to time.
Yes. I think share of mind is a great thing because you can look at, you know, you look at you versus the competition in, you know, blogs, Facebook, Twitter, and, you know, and traditional media, and you get a pretty interesting picture.
I was going to ask you that next about the non-traditional media, the social media in particular. How is that changing the equation? How is it making it more difficult for the practitioner to evaluate the outcomes?
Well, part of it's making it actually easier because you can count click-throughs from a blog or from Twitter or from whatever. You can count click-throughs to your blog or your website. So that's a fairly easy measure. Once you have a click-through, then you can, you know, track that person. You can see whether they downloaded something. All the whole web analytics, web metric stuff makes it much, much, much easier. Now, that having been said, it also makes it more difficult for people who are still stuck in the 20th century trying to count eyeballs and impressions, because there are no accurate impressions for blogs or, frankly, for most online websites, given the fact that, you know, Comscore and Nielsen are off by 35 million impressions on any given reporting, you know, on any given television station. I mean, it's like their numbers are just out of whack. And so you can't believe them, and why should you believe anything? And then you go from there into, okay, yeah, we get audited circulation figures for print publications. That's great. You get Nielsen for television. But after that, the numbers get very, very, very squishy. So you basically say, I'm not going to look at those numbers. I'm going to look at share of ink, share of mind, share of discussion, whatever you want to do. But if you put it in the terms of share of, it gets to be, you get to be able to look at something fairly tangible.
It's not a measurement topic per se, but how do you see the social media changing the way the conversation takes place? It's been pretty dramatic in some of the things that you and I have crossed paths in. Conversations have turned into viral situations rather rapidly.
Absolutely. I was just saying, I mean, all kinds of things turn into viral situations very rapidly. And again, you know, you can get caught up in the crisis of the moment, and you do have to sort of take a step back and say, what difference does it make? You know, am I selling more or less product as a result? What impact is it having on my employees or on my customers or whatever? One of the things that you always have to step back and look at. I mean, you know, fundamentally, when Dell Hell happened, the reason why everybody paid attention to that was because Dell's stock price dropped by 20%. If their stock price hadn't moved and if their market share hadn't changed, nobody would have paid any attention. I mean, it would have all, not that they wouldn't have paid any attention, but it would have all blown over.
It certainly gets people's attention when the stock price moves.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's got to do something. So, for instance, the whole, you know, Facebook beacon stuff, if that slowed the growth of Facebook, they might have, you know, they'd pay attention. I don't know whether it did or not, but, you know, it's going to be hard to tell because they had a million signups just by sponsoring the debate. So, you know, what's having an impact there? Ultimately, despite all the beacon brouhaha, a million people signed up for Facebook on January 7th or whenever that debate was.
You spend a whole chapter in the book, Katie, talking about comparing media relations to other marketing disciplines. And one of the things that we've seen sort of a trend in large companies is increasingly putting the public relations function under the marketing function, and PR people finding themselves having to justify what they do on the same terms that marketing people do. So I was interested in your comparison there. What are some of the problems and issues, and what are some of the ways that media relations people can address that?
Well, I mean, and the you know, I basically, that chapter is Katie Payne's, work around the AVE issue. But that was really like, okay, if you got to do this stuff, here's how you're going to make it compare to other disciplines. And what we're finding, of course, is that, the tools get more robust every day. That the being able to, for example, you know, ASPCA can tell whether they get more online donations from PR surrounding the Chinese pet food recall than they do from a banner ad, for example. So there's more and more tangible ways to compare the two. But basically what that chapter says is that if your purpose is to communicate key messages, if you put a budget figure out there, look at how many opportunities to see your key messages you generate and how many eyeballs that you've generated, then you can, you can do a fast calculation to say, okay, my cost per message communicated in the Wall Street Journal with a paid ad is $50. My cost per message communicated with earned media is, $2. My cost per message communicated on my website is 50 cents. What am I going to do more of? Whatever is cheapest.
What you talk about the impact of events and sponsorships as well, and a lot of companies, particularly in the financial services industry, do a lot of events and local sponsorships. Do you think those kinds of tactics move the needle significantly in these relationships?
Oh, yeah. Again, it depends upon what my line of the week is, don't ask me, ask your customers. Here's a perfect example where I was actually on the sponsorship event. I was running a sailboat campaign in Australia. And, our sponsor was, a technology company down there, and they put up, I don't know, $30,000 or something, or $10,000 or whatever, hosted a party, got a boat, you know, had 3 hours of high-quality FaceTime with their customers, all of whom, because it's Australia, all of whom were thrilled to death to be at the start of this race. That sponsorship paid off for them big time. If they had done, you know, if they had put $30,000, you know, in sponsoring the symphony, would it have had as much results? No. Ask the customer is the question. You know, in other words, if you're thinking about sponsoring something, it better be of interest to the to your customers. If it's not, find something that is. So, you know, you sit there and say, well, I'm going to, my standard answer is, you know, if you're trying to reach influential, smart people with high incomes, just go underwrite NPR, because that's going to do you more good than anything else. And, you know, get your messages out there. If you're trying to reach teenage boys, you know, then do something in the, you know, gaming world or something. I mean, it's just, you really do have to, it's only going to be effective if it's appealing to your customer base and your constituency.
And you also describe in the book the steps to take to put together a dashboard of all of these measurements. What are some short steps that people can take, quick advice you can give them about setting up a dashboard?
The first thing is, again, you know, figure out what success looks like. If your boss is going to walk into your office at the end of the year with a case of champagne and give you a 20% raise, what's different? What have you done to so delight him within the, you know, what's different within the organization? What have you done that's going to so delight him? The next step is to figure out what your benchmarks are. Can you, you know, is there a competitor that you can benchmark against, or is there a peer organization, or, you know, are you sort of doing stuff over time? What is it that you're going to, you know, benchmark your success against? And those are probably the two. And, you know, and then, frankly, how much stuff are you analyzing? And that'll tell you whether you need to, you know, set your dashboard to look at, you know, trend over, you know, by week, by month, by year. You know, if you don't have a whole lot of data, you might want to just trend it over quarters. If you got a ton of data, you might want to, you know, trend month to month. And then, you know, and then I hate to say it, but then, you know, then it's really what content are you going to put on your dashboard? What makes a difference? Is it media clips? Is it website traffic? Is it online donations or sales leads? Or, you know, what is that measure of success? That's going to be your unit of measure. And, you know, and it can be many things. It doesn't have to be one. What I try to tell people is try to keep it to, you know, no more than 10 things on your dashboard, because over 10, it's sort of too much data for any human being to cope with.
You just have to look at the dashboard of a car to see that.
I mean, you know, do you want to look at the dashboard of a car or a 777? You know, I mean, if you're a pilot, you want to look at a 777, but I don't know a whole lot of PR people that are pilots.
Katie, anything that you see on the horizon in terms of really exciting new developments in PR measurement?
Well, I think that there are two or three things that are right out there, I mean, a year or so away. One is a measure of engagement, you know, some kind of engagement metric that compiles, you know, website, compiles all these things into, you know, let's see whether we can come up with something that everybody agrees upon to measure engagement. And I know that's on the horizon because I'm supposed to give a paper on it in Miami on March 7th, so I guess I better think about it. Also, March 7th at this the Institute for the International Public Relations Research Conference is this big PR research group, and at the same place we'll be taking another step closer to some kind of a transparency index. So how to measure transparency and credibility and trust. is, you know, it's there. It's just kind of, again, operationalizing it, making it into some kind of an index. And then in terms of social media, the next kind of the cool thing that we'll be talking a whole lot more about, again, in March or April, is some steps we've taken and a report that we've done on measuring social bookmarking, quantifying and categorizing Facebook entries and Facebook PR, if you will, and more on our YouTube study. I mean, basically, I think you're going to see lots more measures of YouTube coming up.
Sounds very exciting. Sounds very interesting. We know you'll
be. It is exciting. It's very fun, I have to say.
And we know you'll be right at the forefront of all of it.
Absolutely. That's where we like to be. Out on the bleeding edge, just about to fall off.
Wonderful. Katie Payne, thanks for being with us on the podcast.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
We hope you enjoyed this Middle Chamber Books podcast brought to you by GoToMyPC. Don't forget the free 30-day trial of GoToMyPC by visiting gotomypc.com/podcast. If you have comments or suggestions about our podcasts, please email me at steve@middlechamberbooks.com. You can also send us an audio comment. We'll use it in a future podcast. Send us an MP3 file or call our podcast comment line in the U.S. 856-861-6146. Be sure to use the +1 in front of that. Or in the U.K., in Europe, it's +44-020-7193-6146. Our theme music for this podcast is Cook the Books from the Indianapolis Jazz Orchestra. It's one of the PodSafe music selections you'll find at GarageBand.com. We produce these programs in the studios of Professional Podcasts in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. This is Steve Lubetkin. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you out there on the net. Take good care.